recognizing the unsung heroes of sports media.
I'm stuck in this pit, working for less than slave wages, working on my day off.
This is the Producers Podcast.
I'm a producer.
Oh, you the executive producer.
With your host, Dimitri Ravenos. And it starts now.
Man, hard to believe we're almost at the end of season one on the Producers Podcast. This is the first of our final three episodes for 2019. Don't worry, we'll only take about a month, maybe a month and a half off before we come back with season two. I hope you've learned a lot. If you want to know what I have taken away from season one of the Producers Podcast, go to BarrettSportsMedia.com. And while you're there, do all the things you're supposed to do, right? Listen to JB's podcast, listen to Under the Radar with Brandon Contis, and then click on my new column for this week for a couple of reasons. Number one, it sort of sums up what I've learned about managing and working with producers from doing this podcast. And also, we got to make me an indispensable part of the Barrett Sports Media family. Not that I don't feel like I am, but I would like JB to look at my numbers every week and go, man, I should start paying Dimitri triple what I am paying him right now. And not to brag, I know it's crass to talk about money, but that would get me to a cool $300 a month. All right, so today, it's interesting. Maybe I should have saved this one for the season finale, not just because a guy named Jimmy Stewart should have his podcast episode air as close to Christmas as possible, but also because James Stewart is the executive producer of Felger and Maz on the Sports Hub up in Boston, the show that just won the Marconi for Major Market Personality of the Year. The Sports Hub is a monster. Felger and Maz are a huge tentpole in that organization's success. And James, I think, comes at this a very interesting way. He will talk about a lot of things here, including the competitive nature of Boston sports radio. And one thing that I found very interesting is the way he thinks strategically about how to interject new voices into the show, whether that is bringing in a third mic, whether that is taking a phone call. To me, that was the most interesting part of our conversation. So stick around for that. I'll be back at the end with our thought to wrap up this week. But right now, enjoy my conversation with James Stewart of 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston. Boston is one of, I don't know, one of is the right word. It's probably the most competitive sports radio market in the country. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say that's fair. That's 100% fair between the two sports radio stations, the newspapers, the fact that the Patriots, for example, I swear they give out 50 to 75 media passes a day.
Yeah.
The Red Sox clubhouse is always packed with media members when they're relevant. The Bruins and the Celtics, when they're winning, those locker rooms are packed with media members as well. With regard to the sports radio element to it, both stations are competitive. They're making money. They're doing well in the ratings. The content is good, and competition hopefully makes everybody better.
Yeah, well, I mean, that certainly seems to ring true in Boston. Are you guys allowed to like each other at all? Because, boy, does it not seem that way.
Oh, I'm a wrestling fan, and I do the wrestling podcast, Wrestling Inside the Ropes, on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com. That's kind of secondary to my Felger and Maz producing responsibilities. I worked at EEI for 10 years. I spent the last, I switched over to the Sports Hub in March of 2011. So I get along with everybody over there, as far as I know, unless they mother bleep me behind my back. I to my knowledge, I don't hate anybody.
Sure.
I think I had some philosophical disagreements with people. But I think generally speaking, with an exception here or there, we all get along.
Interesting. Because you guys, which so this
I,
is probably...
I hate to break down the fourth wall like that.
No,
but,
it's interesting
there
breaking down the fourth wall.
There are only a few examples of it.
Yeah, it's interesting having the fourth wall broken down, because I guess doing the wrestling podcast, like, you get it, right? Like, there is the character you put on, and then there is what the reality is day to day. And I've always wondered that, because especially coming from the other side, there seems to be so much animosity. And I sometimes wonder, as small as this business is, as small as the subsect of this business that we're all in is, it's always seemed weird to me that it's, you can't just get along, or you go out of your way, or some stations, I should say, go out of their way not to get along with competition, because there are only so many people that can relate to your experience. So it is interesting to hear the fourth wall broken down and hear what is show and what is reality there.
Well, I think for a while, Fred Tutcher, our morning show host, and Kirk Minahan, the former morning show host of the EI, didn't get along. But then they met at the Super Bowl, and from both sides of it, it seems like they kind of got along, but I wasn't there to witness it. So yeah. I'm just speculating on secondhand information.
Sure.
I know that I haven't talked to anybody at EEI recently, but you know, I jumped over to the Sports Hub, and there was only like two people that I know of that mother bleeped me for joining, for jumping over there. And, you know, I don't talk to those people anyway, and I wouldn't have talked to them.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, like, you know, just nobody I know who works over there dislikes me. And I, as far as I know, get along with everybody over there.
How much are you guys, and I'm talking about all of the producers at 98.5, how much are you paying attention to what competition is doing? And I'm not just including EEI. I'm talking about newspapers, TV, because, you know, we're all competing for the same eyes and ears. How much are you paying attention to what competition is doing, and how much of it is, especially in the Boston realm, we are doing something so different. We need to be focused on covering sports our way, or putting out sports content our way.
So in my case, I read as much as I can. Globe, Herald, Boston Sports Journal, that's Greg Bedard's website, The Athletic, ESPN. And I try to know everything that's going on and insert whatever opinion I have based on that to my talent. I think all the shows are a little bit different, where you've got our morning show is more, I think we're all variety shows to a degree, but we do different varieties. So, Tutcher and Rich are going to do, you know, they're going to talk to Jeff Howe, and then they're going to do something about Mark Gemelli. That's going to make people laugh. So they're going to do sports, and then they're going to entertain you. And maybe within the realm of their interview, like this morning, we're taping this Monday morning, September 23rd. They just had Brandon Merriweather on, the former Patriot, and he's going to give you some entertainment value. And he's also going to give you some insight into the Patriots locker room. So that's a good balance there. So with Felger and Mass, we're more of a X's and O's sports talk show where, again, this is a little bit inside, is we're going to come back. We're going to do some rejoin. That's Adam Schefter talking about Antonio Brown.
Right.
And that's going to lead into Felger saying, I believe this. Maz believes this. If there's a debate point, they discuss it for a few minutes. Then they go to the phone calls. And then we take a break. And then we reset what we're doing next.
Yeah.
And you know, some people on social media are like, oh, your show is scripted. To a degree, it is, because we want to make sure that we have it formatted how we do. Now, our rundown is card subject to change. So like if we're hot on a topic, we'll push everything else back because this is the direction that we think our audience wants to go.
Right. When you are feeling that hot on a topic, is there a point in your mind as the producer where you just have to hit the brakes, or if things are clicking, there's no such thing as too long to stay on a topic?
The example I will use is Friday. Friday, the Antonio Brown breaking news happens at 4:08 p.m. Our usual commercial break would be 4:13, 4:15, somewhere in that realm. We wanted to carry it all the way to 4:20, so we did. Because with radio, this is really fourth wall. Hopefully I'm not glazing people's eyes over. With radio, you want credit for 5 minutes per quarter hour.
Right.
And that's how you get the full ratings point. So if we break at 4:15, we're okay. But if we want to go past that, hopefully going to 4:20 gets us the full 5 minute credits. We come back at 4:25 and then 4:30, and then we carry on the rest of the hour. And hopefully we've gotten those two blocks.
Yeah.
But as far as conversation goes, we try to stay on clock as best possible. But if there's a breaking news story, you have to go with it. I just feel like you have to, because if you don't, somebody's going to click over or somebody's going to find it on their social media feed, and you're just going to have to, you might lose that particular listener.
When it comes to, you talked about the phone calls that Felger and Maz take. When it comes to phone calls, what is your philosophy in terms of their place in the show, how much value they have, and has that changed at all working on this show?
So I think we take too many phone calls, but that's also the pace of the show. And the reason why we take as many phone calls as we do is because it's the sound of Boston.
Yeah.
And we're fortunate enough where we have them, where by 2:10, our phone lines are loaded with people who want to interact with Mike, Tony, Jim.
And how long will those people wait before they are done waiting to get on air? Because it seems like Boston, the Northeast is this way in general, but it seems like Boston even more so is, I've got something I'm going to say, and I will wait to get my chance to say it.
There isn't a lot of drop-offs.
Wow.
There isn't a... There are people who wait 30 to 40 minutes just to get their 60 to 90 seconds on with Mike and Tony, because their point is just so, and to a degree, I think you're sitting in the car, you're listening to the station. Boston traffic is not fun. My commute into work is 45 minutes to an hour. My commute home is 90 minutes. So with the way that cell phones are set up now, you sit in the car and you listen to the station, and then,
right.
You know, Felger goes to Guy in Boston, you're next. Mm-hmm. You're sitting in the car listening, and then, I get to participate in the conversation now. So I think that's kind of why it works. Just the pace of the show, like I use the analogy of if you're in a fight with your significant other, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, you have about 3 minutes of actual back and forth, and then you kind of mentally check out.
Right.
So I feel like that philosophy is with our show, is that you can't have Tony and Mike argue for more than 4 or 5 minutes before the listener's like, okay, this is going nowhere.
Okay, interesting. So that's not what I thought you meant. That's not what I thought you meant by that 3 minutes. I thought you were talking about that as a clock with a listener on the line, and I thought, geez, that seems long, but your point makes a lot of sense. Like at some point, that 3 to 4 minute window, it is time for just some diversity of sound, right?
Exactly. And whether that's Jim Murray chiming in as the third voice or whether that's going to a phone call, that's just the pacing. Usually, like, we open up at 2:00 and we don't touch the phones until 2:22. So that's kind of our way of setting up the show.
Yeah.
And there are things when the Antonio Brown story came out from the Sports Illustrated, we didn't take a phone call for about 45 minutes. Mainly because we wanted to set up everything that Antonio Brown had said in those text messages and in this SI story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of that's more of an exception to our show than it is anybody else. Because we could go to the phones at 2:08 or 2:10 because we're fortunate enough to have them there. Like 2:02, we release the hounds and they're there.
Yeah.
They want to talk about something. They kind of know right. where we're going. So we're fortunate in that regard.
When it comes to something like the Antonio Brown story or the Robert Kraft massage parlor story from earlier in the year, you talk about wanting to take the time to set up the show. And with that Antonio Brown story, make sure you have everything covered that was in those text messages. Stories like that sort of either do or hint at some sort of larger issue, something way beyond the realm of just sports. Is there a more careful approach before you go to phone calls, or do you have to approach every topic the same way to keep the sound of the show consistent?
We do the best we can to be consistent with everything. And I just feel like the Robert Kraft story, we didn't know everything that day.
Right.
So we were a little bit more cautious with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were covering it more of like a news outlet would, where we didn't offer opinions on it. And then once we found out more details to it, that's when, so the Robert Kraft thing happened on Friday. We covered it as a news story. And then Monday, when we knew more of the details of it, that's when we went in with our opinions.
Right.
Because we weren't sure of everything. that was happening.
When something
with
like
Antonio
that.
Brown, with Antonio Brown, we felt like we knew all the details where we could do news and opinion,
right,
all in the same row.
Right. When something like that happens and it's a major breaking story that involves a Boston athlete, whether it's something steeped in controversy or whether it is just a huge on the field sports story, how much are you split between guiding the show and working the phones to either find out more, get somebody on? How much do you become, you know, a guy wearing three different hats at that point?
So for me, it's not, we don't do a lot of guests on the show.
Uh-huh.
It's more picking other people's sound. So
right.
Adam Schefter says this, Ian Rappaport says this. Here's a legal analyst who was on with Tutcher and Rich. Here's somebody who was on with Zolak and Bertrand. That's how we kind of do it. We're the only time we really go guest heavy is during the playoffs, and that's when we throw beat writers on because we're on location and it just sounds better.
Right.
But
right.
With situations like bigger picture stories, our instincts are, because I've been blessed, I'm 38, I've been in the radio business since I'm 20, so I have a good feel for what we should be doing, and
uh-huh.
and the fact that my talent is so on top of things, like, and that's really kind of what makes a great producer, is when your talent is invested and you can kind of fill in the blanks on what their needs are. And that's a long way of getting to the point of, we don't really need guests because we can kind of pick and choose the audio from other places that can support, or that can support our argument or be the other side of the argument. But generally speaking, our callers are kind of the other side of the argument.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned at the beginning of the show, that you are doing the wrestling podcast for the station as well. Why do you think in the past, let's say, I don't know, 12 months, maybe a little bit longer, why do you think wrestling is having this moment with the mainstream sports media all of a sudden?
Because they're paying Fox and ESPN a ton of money for advertising.
Nothing beyond that. No sort of lesson that the mainstream sports media has learned.
No, I think it's a matter of one of my former interns and good friend, Justin Barrasso, writes for Sports Illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it, is all the companies seem to filter their stories through Sports Illustrated. I think the partnership with Fox Sports is huge. I think the partnership with ESPN is huge. And I think you're going to see a lot more of it with the XFL coming up.
Right.
In January, February, somewhere wrong there. Is Vince McMahon, is his contracts for television, he signed 5-year deals with the USA Network and Fox Sports that are going to pay him $2 billion. And then he's got another show on Wednesday night that is going to bring him in $30 to $50 million. And they do shows in Saudi Arabia that bring in between $30 and $50 million per show.
Right.
So he's got all this money to reinvest in marketing and promos. Fox is going to do this lower 48 state bus tour. That costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Vince's payroll is only 11% of his gross revenue. So he's paying his talent 11% of what he brings in. So all that other stuff can go to paying for an ESPY award or paying for commercials on Fox,
mm-hmm.
things like that. And I think that's why you're seeing wrestling more in the mainstream. And I think there's a weird thing with wrestling where we all kind of want to think that it's real and legit. Like, if I ran off to you the Montreal Screwjob, you know what that is, right?
Right, absolutely.
You know that it's Bret Hart.
It's Bret Hart and
Vince McMahon
yeah.
having a real issue, and Vince McMahon really taking the title from Bret Hart during a match. The CM Punk pipe bomb, which was from a few years ago, where people know his contract is up, and he's saying things that aren't usually in a scripted wrestling promo.
Right.
And I think that's why there's this weird thing, like when something happens. Another example would be Daniel Bryan and The Miz getting into this 3-minute argument on this WWE Network show that went viral, because for some reason people want wrestling to be real and to be sports.
Mm.
When, and I think that's just all of us wanting to believe in something. I think.
Before I let you go, we always end the show with the same two questions for everybody. So I'll ask them to you first. Do you have an idea of what it is you want to do next?
I want Mike Thomas's job. Mike Thomas is the brand manager at 98.5, the Sports Hub for the Beasley Media Group.
He's also the sports manager for Beasley in general, right?
Yes, he is. He's the brand manager, his actual title. but I want to be a program director one day.
Yeah.
He knows it. I'm not shy about it. And actually, here's a little story. One of the reasons why I left EEI was because the program director at the time, Jason Wolf, who has done wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
The September before I left, it was September 2010. We have our yearly evaluations, and sometimes you get them, sometimes you weren't. It depends on, you know, what was going on at the time. And he asked me where I saw myself in 5 years. And I turned the question on him. I said, "You're my boss. Where do you see me in 5 years?" And he said, "Well, you're a midday show producer now, and you're a utility guy, and you can kind of go anywhere we need you," because I was doing Red Sox games. I was doing Celtics games. I was doing a lot of other stuff. And I kind of put that as one of those chips on your shoulder. And it's like, well, my boss doesn't see me moving up the ladder, so maybe it's time to go.
Yeah.
And fast forward, I had some life stuff that I was thinking about getting out of radio, because if I thought I was going to be a lifetime employee at 850. And so fast forward a few months, and I'm planning on getting out of the business. I'm planning on creating a life with somebody else, and so on and so forth. So then the Sports Hub opportunity opens up, and I'm like, well, my boss currently doesn't see me as anything more than a midday show utility player. So I'm going to go to a place where they see me producing PM Drive and see where that takes me. And, you know, that was 2011. And now here we are in 2019, and I'm still in radio.
Yeah. And then last but not least, what is it you wish your host or manager understood a little bit better about your job?
That's a great question.
Yeah, my goal is to get a lot of people fired with this podcast.
No, if I'm going to get fired, I'm going to get fired because I'm going to say something stupid. So this is going to sound like a cop-out answer, and I kind of hate saying it, but I think Mike, Tony, Jim, Mike Thomas, Rick Radzik, I think those are all the people. They understand how much work I put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what I do for a job. And I think they appreciate it. Actually, I know they appreciate it.
Well, of course.
So I don't think that there's anything really that they can do or that they may not understand. Because they know that Mike and Tony are pains in the ass. is that the line that's going to get me in trouble? Hopefully.
No, I think you're going to be okay.
but I don't think that there's anything that they kind of need to understand. It's just a matter of for me as a producer, my job is to fill in the blanks for what my talent needs.
Right.
If they need a research project, if they need an audio clip. So I don't want to say my job is more like managing them and their needs and telling them realistically, like, we can't use that because of this reason. I can't find that, or the quality on this isn't good enough to air.
Right.
And maybe that's, but they always kind of understand because I'm logical when I tell them no.
Yeah.
And they understand it. They may not like it, but that's kind of how it is. I feel like that's such a cop-out answer. I wanted to say something more controversial, but that's the reality of kind of what it is. I think they all understand what I do. They think I do a good job at it. I think I do the best that I can under the circumstances. And, you know, I think here we are, and hopefully we've got some more years of me producing, or at least moving to an office position, you know, because Mike Thomas is going to move up the food chain. Yeah. You know, Rick Radzik too.
Decorating for Christmas this week really kind of inspired what it is I want to talk about today as our final thought. Now, if you've never read me writing about this before at BarrettSportsMedia.com, I am a lunatic for Christmas. I'm not. My house doesn't go full Griswold, but it's very close. So this year, as my wife and I are decorating the house, I'm sort of walking around the yard and realizing we're going to have to do some trimming to the bushes and in terms of horticulturally, let's say, that has to be done right near the end of December. I can't really put lights on the bushes again. And frankly, that's something that has become a staple of our Christmas decoration or Christmas decorating since we moved into this house 10 years ago. It is time to switch things up. Right? Lights in the bushes has become a benchmark of decoration in the Ravanas household, and maybe that benchmark has run its course. And that's what I want to talk about in the as it relates to being a producer in the world of sports media. Look, part of what a benchmark does, not only does it set an expectation that the audience knows what to what the show is going to give them every day, every week, whatever sort of frequency it is you do the benchmark with, it is also, if we're being honest, it is an easy block to check off when you're putting together your rundown every day, right? So from a host point of view, from a producer's point of view too, there is, I think, always going to be a little bit of a reluctance to lose a benchmark because then that's one more spot you have to fill every day. But as the producer, your job is to constantly think creatively, constantly evaluate what the show is doing right and what it can be doing better. So I think you really have to trust your instincts when it comes to benchmarks. When have they run their course? When is it starting to feel like you are on a hamster wheel every single time you do this particular segment? When is it that you've gotten to that point where there's just nothing new to add to whatever it is you do, whether it's funny, whether it's informational, even if it is just a benchmarked guest that you have on every week, whether it's seasonal, annual, throughout the year, whatever the case may be? As the producer, it is your job to evaluate where we are with this thing. Is there anything we're doing about this that catches our listeners by surprise anymore? To you, does it still feel like a must listen? Because I've talked about this before. You are the show's ultimate P1, and if a benchmark, if something that you build your entire day of programming around doesn't feel like a must listen to you anymore, imagine how it feels to the listeners that are tuning in every day, usually at the exact same time. It's probably not hitting with them either. And even if you feel like, well, I'm the ultimate P1, I'm a bit ahead of the curve, better to move on before something has run its course than wait too long. It's the Bill Belichick approach to signing and re-signing players, right? So always be evaluating benchmarks and don't always default to what is easiest. I know that sucks, especially from the producer's point of view because you always feel like you have so much work to do. But you are going to get to where it is you want to go faster if people look at you and realize that the show sounds good in part because of the decisions you're making. I'm Demetri Ravanas. Thanks for listening this week. Remember, only 2 episodes left in season 1. If you have not listened all the way through, now might be a good time to go back and binge. We'll catch you next week.
You don't want to believe it, but maybe the show is over.
Thank you for listening to the Producers Podcast. To connect with Demetri, follow him on Twitter at Demetri Ravanos. And for the latest sports media news, visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com.